Four, please.
Oh, what a shot.
Oh,
yes.
Have you seen anything like that?
Four, please. Now drive it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith from ESPN. It is overcast and at times drizzly here at Augusta National, but the weather does not deter the Masters magic for the patrons in attendance. Donning their Masters logoed rain jackets, they come from all over the world in droves to see their heroes defy logic on the grandest stage. As Justin Thomas said, the course is in really good shape. It's firm, it's fast. Can't do much about the weather the rest of the week, but I'm sure the Greens staff is very, very pleased with the course conditions. As always, the stunning beauty of Augusta National has a distinct way of masking its difficulty. Thomas went on to say that so many shots or holes can look like they're right in front of you, but they never truly are. It's never that easy. The Masters demands precision and patience from its participants. And when they find that combination and couple it with consistency, history happens. Very few people have witnessed more history here than Vern Lundquist. The CBS sports broadcasting icon has provided the soundtrack to some of the most memorable moments in sports history. He called the kick six in the Iron Bowl. He called Grant Hill to Christian Laettner in the Elite Eight. And he called two of the most outstanding moments in Masters history. I walked out to the scene of one of those moments, the 16th hole, to learn from the legend.
Oh, no! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Vern Lundquist is a legend, an icon, a great friend, someone I've admired for so long.
That means I'm old, Marty.
As we stand here sort of at the precipice of your 40th and final Masters, when I say those words, what stands out?
Well, I'll reach down here and grab the inner part of my thigh to keep from getting emotional. It will be an emotional week. There's just no doubt, no way to escape that. But I've had 2 years to get ready for it. Sean McManus, our boss, the chairman at CBS Sports, Sean and I got together a couple years ago, and he and I had collaboratively decided when to end SEC football. We had collaboratively decided when to end basketball. And so we collaboratively, 2 years ago, he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, 40's got a nice round sound to it. So this will be it." And I'm looking forward to the whole week. I've had 2 years to get ready, so I'm reasonably.
Well, something good just happened.
Well, I think it was. I think they just said it. They just said it was my final Masters, and the crowd is going, "Yes, sir."
Yes. But, well played.
Sorry,
well
it just
played.
Sat there, Marty.
Well played.
I just
right there on tee.
I couldn't ignore it. But you know, having been given 2 years to. To prepare for this week, I think I'm ready.
When you walked in here today, and you're sitting here, we're sitting here on 16, watching these guys have a blast. What is the emotion even today?
Well, anticipation, a little dread, because I don't want to get emotional on the air. I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to come, but I'm going to try and stifle any expression of emotion. This is the Masters, for crying out loud. But to be back here for this.
I love this place.
I do too.
I mean, it's just so special.
Right here, I mean, on this tower back here, you sit here and I can see third shots here. I can see the tee shots at six. I can look down and see the tee shots at 17. It is a magical place to
and
sit
it's
here.
Been your home.
Yeah.
For all these years.
25 years. Yeah.
Let's just discuss. I want to discuss the most famous of those moments in just a moment. But when you walk in here, there's a magic. You've done it all. You've been at every major sporting moment in the last 40 years. But there's something here, sir, that just feels magical.
It's
what is it?
They're playing practice rounds behind you. And somebody is doing really well right now.
Tony Finau.
Tony, is it Tony?
Tony's trying to skip that thing across.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you got a good one. You got a good one.
Oh! That's great, Marty. I got to share some with you. Oh, 10, 15 years ago, I watched VJ tee off and tried to skim it. It bounced four times, rolled up, went back left, hole in one with four skips. Pretty memorable.
It's another thing that makes this place so special is the roars and the people and the history and the reverence that all of us carry when we're in here.
There's no place in my life quite like this Masters tournament. And I'm hoping that Sean McMahon is my boss. I'm hoping he's going to say, well, why don't you come back for next year?
There we go.
And then I'm going to say, yeah, I'd love to. And he said, but it's on your dime. You're going to pay for
it. We're going to start the campaign now.
Let's
GoFundMe for Vern to come back next year. Two of the most iconic calls in sports history were yours right here. Let's start at 17 in 1986. I want you to walk me through the entire experience of Jack Nicklaus' magical run.
Well,
do you have an hour?
We got time.
Well,
especially your part at 17.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Marty. Jack began the day four shots behind Seve, and he really had a very mundane first eight holes. And there's a wonderful story about this. Frank Trakinian, the Ayatollah, who was our producer. Lance Barrow, who later succeeded Frank as the producer, was in the second row of the truck. Lance is a man of large girth, and his nickname was Buddha. So Trakinian was the Ayatollah, and Jack birdied nine, right? And Lance said, Frank, we've got Jack with a birdie on nine. And Frank stood up and turned around, and he said, Buddha, listen to me. We're telling stories here, and Jack Nicklaus is not part of this story. Okay, he birdies 10. Lance said, Frank, we got Jack with a birdie at 10. And Frank just stood up, turned around, and just glared at him. Birdie 11. Frank, we got Jack with three birdies in a row. Okay, play him back. So we saw 9, 10, 11, and I promise you, Marty, Jack did not take a step on Augusta National that was not documented on CBS for the rest of the way. And he just had an extraordinary second nine. So now, at the age of 46, with no wins in 2 years, with those ugly plaid pants and that big putter.
They were pretty bad,
weren't they? Oh, gosh almighty. And he hit his tee shot way over to the left near the seventh green. And I knew now, Jack, I don't think he was a scoreboard watcher, but he's tied for the lead. And he pitches on. He's got a 12-foot putt, kind of a double breaker. And I just said, if he makes it, this is for sole possession of the lead. So he hits the putt, and being bold and aggressive, it's that far from the hole. And I said, maybe. Well, no kidding. maybe. And then when it went in, I said, yes, sir, with a little more emphasis than that. And
it's just iconic, sir.
Well, I just,
do you ever sit there and think, I can't believe that's me?
Well, I was reacting. Again, you got to be reactive. You can't be proactive. So I with a lot of emphasis. I mean, I was thrilled for Jack.
It was one of these, man.
There was a little emphasis to it. But I hope to see Jack this week. And we're inextricably tied together because of his putt and what I said in the air. And I understand he's going to be at Augusta all week long. So I'm hoping to see him and say thank you. But I know Jack pretty well. I don't know Tiger that well, just age difference. But I know Jack quite well.
But yet you are also inextricably linked with Tiger for the rest of time because of 2005 on the 16th.
I kind of remember that.
I hope so. It's the greatest golf shot ever.
Well, in my view, it is. This was at Augusta, for crying out loud. And when he stood over the ball, Lanny Watkins was in the tower at 18. And Lanny and I were going back and forth. And I said, and Chris DeMarco was his fellow competitor at the time. And Chris had hit 20 feet below the hole. And I asked Lanny what he thought. Well, as Tiger was getting ready to hit the chip shot, and Lanny said he'll be lucky if he can keep this inside DeMarco's ball. So he hits the chip, and here it comes. And, you know, 25 feet above the hole, it starts to dribble, tumble down, and it sits on the lip of the cup. Yeah.
You just kind of got to look.
Yeah,
you
know?
Like
I know.
You got to look because it's...
Yeah. It sat there for 1.8 seconds, and it tumbled in. And then I was reactive. I said, in your life, have you ever seen anything like that? Because I hadn't. And I thought people at home certainly had never. And then to watch Tiger's, and there's another part of the story. Up in the tower was a guy who's retired now, Bob Wishney. And Bob and I, well, on Wednesdays, we'd come out here and I'd just get in the tower and Bob and I would talk. We'd get together and he showed me they put brand new cameras on the main camera location for every hole on the second nine. And he said, this has got a new zoom lens, 101:1. And he zoomed in on somebody put a nickel down here 20 feet. And he zoomed in and we could read it. In God We Trust, 2002. And he said, the other thing is they put horizontal stabilizers on here so that when you get excited and you jump up, the camera won't shake, the tower won't shake, and I won't get yelled at. And so sure enough, here comes the ball, tumbles down, sits on the lip, drops in, and I stood up and went, yeah, in your life. And if you see the replay, there's a little like that. That was me. And Wishney just stared at me.
Well, like, if you're human, if you're a human being in that energy and all of that just beautiful moment, yeah, you got to do that.
Well, I have to share one thing. I don't collect autographs. You and I can't do that because we pretend that we're professionals, right? But Jax was so special and Tiger's was so special. So I sent a photograph to Jack and he signed it to Vern, yes, sir, with a smiley
awesome
face. Boom. And then I talked to Mark Steinberg, Tiger's rep, and I said, I know you get inundated with these requests, but this is a pretty special moment. And Mark said, I agree, send it up here. So Tiger signed it for me. And I've got the two of them. When I pass, and my wife does, all of my memorabilia is going to my alma mater, Texas Lutheran University. And those two photographs will go down there. And I can't wait to see how they're going to be displayed.
Well, I will tell you, your grace, the way that you've carried yourself ever since I've known you and even before I was around, everyone that has the blessing of being in your presence always compliments what a wonderful gentleman you are and have always been. You are such a beautiful ambassador, not just for sport,
oh, wow,
and not just for the Masters, but how a gentleman should carry himself.
I see you're going to make me tear up right here.
I'm trying my damnedest.
Thank
congratulations,
you, thank you, Marty.
On 40 legendary years.
Thank you so
and
much.
And I can't wait until this weekend,
yeah,
so we can hear you do it one last time.
I can't wait either. I can't wait either.
Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Marty.
Appreciate you, sir.
Thank you so much.
As we chatted, standing there on the fairway, Bobby Jones named Redbud, I couldn't help but turn around several times and peek at the green, where so many of Vern's legendary calls echo with the ghosts. At another point this week, I was walking the 16th with the likes of Jordan Spieth and Sergio Garcia, the 2015 and 2017 Masters champions respectively, as they thrilled the patrons with another great Masters tradition, skipping golf balls across the pond and up onto the 16th green. Spieth told me as we neared the water's edge that he's mastered the craft. And for the record, his shot backed it up. Roger Steele is a great friend of mine, a golf personality who is really doing great content, brother. It's so fun to watch. And I just learned a brand new dad. Congratulations.
Oh, I appreciate you. Don't congratulate me yet. Let's see how I do with the whole fatherhood.
You're going to be amazing at it with your grace and the way you carry yourself and your personality. It's the most difficult, most rewarding responsibility that we can have as men.
I feel it.
And it's the best.
I don't feel the best part, but I do feel
no
feel
sleep
the
yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I was telling the baby, I'm trying to whisper these things to her, hoping some of this stuff resonates. I'm like, sleep deprivation is a war tactic. It's a torture tactic. You know what I mean? You're torturing daddy right now. Why don't you just go to sleep? But no, it has been a very beautiful process. Like the growth that you go through, you know, now that you have to care for something that literally needs you to survive. And I've just never had that amount of pressure on me before. And so trying to figure out who I am now that that's the circumstance has been, it's been, you know, changing for me. But deciding to come down here, though, you know, she's only a month old. She made a month on Sunday. And we were talking about it. You know, we were trying to line up the timelines. Like, okay, you're pregnant now. That was really the only thing we were thinking about. Augusta's in April. The baby's coming in March. Do we think that we could? So I didn't really push her on it, you know, push my lady on it. But then, you know, when it got time, it was just, you know, I love being a dad. And it did give me a little guilt to slip down here away from her. But this experience is just, it's special. It's very special to be down here.
That's, you know, the power, yeah, of the Masters, what you just said. It okay, is, we're babies due here. Yeah. The Masters is here. Let's see if we can get on with this, please.
Should we induce her a little early just to make sure we get a – should we – you know what I mean? It's just – it's interesting the concessions that you try to make to make sure that you can make this trip every year. But every time you come down, it is worth it.
Okay, so how do you describe the Masters to somebody who hasn't lived it?
I just think that, you know – This is the ultimate golf experience on every front that you could think of, right? As a player, this is everything that you want to win. This is what you grow up fantasizing in your head. You sinking a putt on 18 to you know, win something. It's always talk about a green jacket. You know, once you get down here as a fan, as a patron, you know, as a spectator, there's just no stone left unturned as far as the attention to detail. And it's just something that, no matter how many times I watched this, you know, watching the Masters on Sunday with my father was just a household tradition. You know, every Sunday we sat in his room, I sat on his bed, and we just watched the Masters, you know. And it's amazing for all of those years that I watched it on TV and how much I thought I understood what Augusta looked like. When you get down here, it's like, oh.
I mean, it's just a whole different
ball game.
The greenest green you've ever seen.
Like, what shade of green is this?
It's the most, and you know, to the attention to detail, everything is perfection.
Yeah. I looked at a blade of grass that was leaning over a little too hard, and it stood up, stood back in place.
Yeah, you had to kind of poke it over just a little bit. It's funny you talk about your time with your dad and those moments that you had with him. I had the same ones. I think that's certainly applicable for so many people, and it's relatable for so many people. What is it about the generational aspect of this that's so special?
I don't know. I just think that, like, it's kind of baked to me. It seems to be baked into, you know, the history of Augusta, right? Like, Augusta has always seemed like a place where they respect tradition, but it always evolves, right? And if you think about the father-son bond, it's really like, you know, your father always represents, you know, some form of tradition, and you become an evolution of him. And it's like this passing of the torch. And the thing that's always amazed me about the club and about the tournament is that they continue to evolve in a way that respects tradition, but there's always evolution. You know, you have tradition and you have these very progressive things that people are trying to do, but Augusta has a way of just evolving tradition, which I don't think that
it's hard to do.
It's very hard.
It's funny.
To do.
It's like we're like-minded. We're like sharing a brain. I just said almost those same exact words a couple of days ago, that while always holding dear to the tradition and the rich history that defines it, Augusta is always evolving. And it's so rare. It's just such a unique energy, I guess, is the best way to do it. I know you love fashion, so I can't imagine what it's like when you go to the merch building. All right, you need to break this down for me. What is your philosophy and your strategy when you walk in there?
You know, that's probably the most helpless merchandise. That's the most helpless consumer experience I've ever had.
You just say, here's the card.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's, you know, there's so many people there and there's so many things. And in the back of your mind, you got like this unsubstantiated fear that like the thing that you're looking at is not going to be there in 5 seconds if you don't get it right then and there. And then, unfortunately, you don't have your phone, so it's nobody to talk you off the ledge. The times I've been down here, you know, I'm by myself. That's another bad move. You should always go in there with somebody. Bring a support person with you, a support shopper. But I go in there, and then the thoughts that start crossing your mind, like, but I could wear this with this. I could pair this with that. My dad might like this. What about my mom? What about my cousins? What about that one guy that I'm probably going to play with at some point in time that's probably going to know that I went to the Masters and want something? Like, I'm just all these scenarios that I start to go through in my head about stuff that I should buy. And then, you know, I get this box of stuff shipped back to the house, and my girl sees it, and she just
shakes it. Why didn't you give me anything?
Even if I get her stuff, it's still, she just shaking her head like, what are you going to do with all of this stuff? Like, I don't know, but I don't need to know, you know, but it's...
What is the one item that all your boys, before you come down here, say, Raj, you got to get me this? They want hats, probably.
Yeah, the hats. The hats. The hat games are crazy. You know, the buckets, they evolve every... I'm a big bucket guy.
I know you're a big bucket guy. You go get one yet?
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. I'm trying to just... I'm letting the fans, all of the patrons, I'm letting them get their pass at everything, and then I'll go in there and get some of the scraps, you know? Even though I know that they restock it, like, every minute on a minute or something like that. But no, it's just... I'm always impressed at how they managed to lure my dollars out of my pockets
Me
when
too.
I walk in.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And then the gnome thing. The people lined up at dawn for the gnomes.
How quickly did they sell out? Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as they opened the door.
And it was like a one per person, or it was some type of limit that they put on them, and they still sold out instantly.
It doesn't matter what limit they put on them. They're going to be gone. You know, I was standing on the first fairway this morning, waiting on Tony Finau to tee off, because I was going to do a walk and talk shoot with him on the second for ESPN. So I'm standing there, and so many people are coming over to say hello. And this one guy walks up, and he has this kind of unique look on his face, and he goes, Marty, look across the tee box there. And I look across, and there's a nice lady waving at me. He goes, that's the future Miss McNulty. And I said, future? He goes, I just proposed to my fiance right over there in front of the clubhouse. He said, I've been waiting my whole life, more than 30 years, to come here and see this in person. And this is the first time I've ever been here. And I got to propose to my fiance today. I'm like, I guess that means she said yes, since you're calling her your fiance. But that's just another one of those stories that people wait to have the energy here in order to accentuate the energy of a moment that's that landmark in a life. Yeah. What is the wildest thing you've seen?
It's just, you know, as I you know, I have no problem talking to people, very extroverted, but I go out here and I just hear like how hard people have worked to get here. You know, 15, 20 years in the lottery system, and they finally got it. And, you know, they're bringing their friends with them. And you see their eyes start to tear up about, like, man, this is better than I ever imagined. And I just, you know, it's just kudos to the culture that they've built around the event. But it's special to a lot of people. And I see a lot of first timers that are here, you know, bringing people. I see people that worked here. You know, I was talking to one lady. She said, I worked here in 97 when Tiger won his first Masters. And now I bring, like, anytime I get tickets, I always bring someone for their first time when they come, just because I understand the power that
cool.
this had. And so then she was with it was a lady that was with a group of girls. So she had two girls with her that was their first time coming, and one girl that was her second time coming. And the girl that was there for the second time was like, you know, I play golf all the time now because she brought me to the Masters last year. And then the girls that just got here is just like, I can't wait to leave Augusta so I can make golf a part of my life. This is insane. So I just don't think that there's a lot of other venues, a lot of other events that has that type of power over people. And, you know, it's no secret why it's, you know, such a coveted experience by so many.
You know, to Tiger a second ago and what he did in 1997. I was talking to him earlier today, and he mentioned that victory, and he actually said, I got lucky in 97, as if he didn't run away from the field in 1997. But I would love to have your perspective on what you believe he's done for the game of golf. And I know it's like impossible to encapsulate, but what's your thought on that?
I think that, you know, what Tiger has done, it's a twofold thing, right? And this is an interesting subject. Tiger has been a great ambassador for what greatness looks like. You know, he showed us with dedication, with focus, with intensity, with love in the work and love in the process, what you can achieve. You know, because I would like to think that all of us start off as these people that, you know, we have this limitless potential, but who's going to put in the work to unlock it? And he was just a great representation. And this is, you know, independent of race, the racial implications, but he's just a great representation of what happens when a human puts in the effort to maximize their potential. And so, like, as, you know, as a golfer, I look to him whenever I'm, you know, whatever type of competitions I play in. And I just try to always tap into that mentality when I'm off the course of just doing the work and trusting the work and letting the work take care of the result. I think that a lot of people sometimes, especially in the Black community, we look at Tiger and sometimes they ask, could he have done more for advancing the culture of the sport in a more direct way, you know? And when people bring that to me, I say, you have no idea how hard it was for him to do what he did when he was doing it. In 97, you know, to be a young Black man coming out and just really shaking up the game like that, to think through, like, the threats that must have happened and just, like, some of the resistance that he must have faced throughout his career and changing the game as much as he has, I just don't think that it was any easy task for him to put the game and the diversity of the game on his shoulders the way that he did. And I just want to tell Tiger, like, you know, just a real job well done for everything that you've done personally to carve out this lane so that people feel comfortable representing themselves and know that if they do put in the work, they can be great, you know, because that's what he means to me. If you put in the effort, you can achieve, you know. And so I know that, you know, it's and this may not even be the best, you know, the best topic or, like, the best way to frame this, that question, you know, given where we are. But I just think that Tiger has done an immense amount for the game, and anybody that scrutinizes that in any way has no idea what he's been through paving the way that he has and doing it the way that he has.
Extremely well said. And not only that, it's with that dominance comes that platform. And with that platform comes all of that pressure and all of that expectation. And he didn't just win. He didn't just thrive. He rewrote every single record.
Every single one. Every single one, man.
While carrying that. Yeah. And it's just remarkable to me.
And it's just, you know, like, a lot of times we look at, you know, these figures in the game and we expect them to be so much more than just, like, what they're good at. Like, Tiger loves to play golf. And he is, you know, in my opinion, the best to ever do it. And it's like the fact that we take someone that has this very rare skill set in this one segment and we apply all of this pressure to him to be everything to everybody else. It's kind of unfair a bit, you know. But I think that with all of the pressure that Tiger has had on himself and still trying to figure out, you know, who he is as a man and the things that he wants to represent beyond the game, I think that he's done, you know, a great job, especially in this, you know, these last years of, you know, showing us what he's like as a father, you know, showing us what he's like as a mentor, you know, and really taking a bunch of players under his wing to make sure that they have the knowledge so that they can continue to push the game forward. Like, I just think that he's done, for all of the responsibility that comes with the greatness that he has, he's done a great job at managing my expectations of him as, you know, the greatest to ever do it.
Well, he told me that the competitive fire within still burns every bit as hot as it ever has, and he believes he can still win here.
Oh, you see it.
And so it'll be fascinating to see how this week unfolds for him. I would love nothing more than on Sunday afternoon for those roars to be for him, because it's just a different energy, man. 2019 here was electric in a way. I mean, it was almost irreverent in a way Augusta is never irreverent. The people were on a heater, and it was wonderful to witness. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. You got to pick somebody. You got to pick a winner for me. Who you got?
I mean, it's just hard not to think that Scheffler's not going to win. It's just, you know, I just feel like he's been kind of, you know, he laid dormant and kind of, I felt like he laid down at that, you know, that last start that he had on the last hole just to make sure that the buzz stayed low so he could do what he needed to do here. But, I mean, he's just playing a level of golf that we just haven't seen in a very, very long time. And I do expect him to come out and make a strong showing. But, you know, I just there's a lot of really, really good golfers in the field, and it's just great that we have the opportunity to have them all back here competing
Amen.
Against each other.
Well
this
stated.
Is, this is great.
Thank you, brother.
My man.
Appreciate you always.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Roger Steele. Augusta National founder Bobby Jones is considered the greatest amateur golfer ever. And since its inception, he stressed the importance of using the Masters platform to elevate the future of the game. This year, there are 5 amateurs on site. I climbed up in the crow's nest, the historic perch atop the Augusta National Clubhouse that houses amateur players during Masters Week. Some of the greatest golfers who ever lived have stayed there, including Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and Tiger Woods. About his stay in the crow's nest 29 years ago, Woods said, quote, "It was the ultimate to be able to stay in the crow's nest and to watch Byron Nelson, Sam Snead, and Gene Sarazen tee off on the first hole." In the field this week and visiting the crow's nest are Asia-Pacific amateur champion Jasper Stubbs and Latin America amateur champion Santiago de la Fuente. Jasper Stubbs and Santiago de la Fuente. If you ever heard your name, you're from Houston. You hear some country boys say your name, right?
I've heard some weird stuff.
I did all right, right?
You were good.
These gentlemen have the great opportunity to play in the 88th Masters Tournament. Let's just start right there. You guys are youngins, but I'm sure since you started the game, this has been in your dreams. So how has your experience so far? I know we're just starting the week, but sort of intersected those dreams.
Yeah, it's obviously been a lifelong dream to come play the Masters, and I think all the expectations you have growing up as a kid, once you get here, they're all met, absolutely. It's an amazing place, and yeah, it's spoken of so highly, but yeah, definitely worth the wait.
That is one crazy thing about Augusta National is they can tell you, but whatever your expectations are, it seems to exceed it every time, right?
Every time. I feel like everyone is a golfer. When they're on the putting green or the driving range or whatever, we're saying we have a 4 or 5 foot and we're like, this is to win the Masters or this is to win whatever tournament. And for me, having this opportunity to play in the Masters and probably win, I mean, who knows? It's a dream come true.
It is. And it's such a wonderful opportunity. You both earned your opportunity. There will be people watching who don't know how you guys earned your way in. Jasper, you start. Share with us how you got here.
Yeah, I won my way through the Asia Pacific Amateur in a 2-hole playoff down at Royal Melbourne.
Pretty good, kid.
Pretty good. It was very, very good sudden death playoff. I thought I'd clutched it on the first playoff hole, but yeah, I got it answered straight back and then had to do it again a whole nother time. But
when that's the context in which you earn a Masters invitation and you're standing there a victor, when does that emotion kind of hit you and the realization that, holy smokes, I'm going to play in the Masters?
Yeah. Yeah, it still didn't seem real, even when I'd had the trophy and I was doing all the presses afterwards. It still took, a couple of weeks or maybe even a month until the invitation arrived, and it's like, well, that's it. Like, I've got to go now because I'm in. So, it took a while, but it was awesome.
That's the single most coveted piece of mail probably that
ever.
When that shows up in the mail, how do you open it? Are you guys social media guys? Did you make sure that you were capturing the moment?
I mean, I FaceTime my friends because, I mean, my friends are back home. So I FaceTime them and we open it together, and it was a very special moment.
I mean, it, how about you? I mean, when you open that mail.
Yeah, I mean, I waited for my family to get home from whatever they were doing on the day, and we all opened it together, had a video, and lots of screaming and shouting. That's for sure. It was awesome. Yeah.
I mean, it's the ultimate. And so, Santiago, share with our folks how you qualified for the Masters.
I won the 2024 Latin America Amateur Championship in Panama, which it was my 4th LAC, and it was very special.
All right, so you're both going to have a wonderful opportunity starting Thursday. How will you define success this week, Jasper?
Yeah, I mean, there's different levels to it for me. I mean, I'd love to just have a good week, and I think I'm already sort of starting to do that. So it's been a fun week and one I'll remember forever. And then sort of gradually you make the cut, that's the next goal, and then you work your way up trying to get back to next year with the top 12, and then low AM would be awesome as well. And I guess everyone, the one thing on everyone's mind is a green jacket, so I mean that would be a great success.
It would be an historic mm-hmm. one, mm-hmm. sir. Yeah. How about you?
I will say just learning from this experience, because there's a long way in this golfing career. So if the more I can learn about this, the better. So I will say that's the way to succeed for me.
It's one of the things that makes the Masters so special is that annual tradition that Bobby Jones wanted so deeply to champion you guys as amateur players. When you think about his conviction, the guy that made all of this happen, what's that tell you about his devotion and the club's devotion to maintaining his wishes?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And even the players professionally respect those wishes as well. They come up to you and they say congratulations because they know that you're an amateur because they've never seen your face before, but they know you've done something amazing to get a ticket to the Masters. So, yeah, it's pretty cool to have that happen.
Who's the coolest person you guys have met so far?
I played with Olazabal today.
Oh, my word. Legend, man.
It was very cool.
What stories did he share?
Not many, but a lot of knowledge from here.
You gonna give any up?
No.
I don't blame you. How about you?
Yeah, I've met Adam Scott, obviously, Cam Smith and Jason Day while I've been here, which has been pretty cool, obviously, all from back home. So they're guys I've looked up to for a while now, and it's pretty cool to be playing on the same course as them for the week.
I was going
to
ask you about those guys. All three of those guys are world-class dudes. Yeah. They are just such good men. When you're following in that kind of footsteps and you do grow up looking up to them, what's it like when they acknowledge your career?
Yeah, it's really cool to think that they'd know what you've done, because obviously growing up as a kid, you've watched every golf shot they've probably hit for 5 to 10 years. And yeah, to think that they've watched any of mine's pretty cool.
Well, I'm so thrilled for both of you. Thank you for your time. Best of luck this week. Congratulations on your tremendous success. And if one of you two is wearing a green jacket Sunday evening, I'll see you for the big ESPN interview too, I guess.
Sounds Thank good. You so
have
much.
Have fun Thank this you. Week, guys.
Thank Cheers. You.
Those young men have very bright futures in the game, and we wish them well as they attack the Masters for the first time. Coming up on our next episode, we're joined by Rick Shields and Seb Carmichael Brown, two great golf personalities, as well as Dude Perfect, 15 years to the day after it all began for them. Thank you so much for spending your time with us here during Masters Week on 4 Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast.